As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6 A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4 to 6 with A&B, your Ohio State podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landish, joined by Ari Wasserman, who is currently in Los Angeles. And Ari, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm going to watch the Elite 11, going to watch some quarterbacks chucking around. Turns out, Ari was out there brokering a deal to bring UCLA and USC to the Big Ten. Ari, how'd you get it done?
I'm in Big Ten country. That's all I know. This sport. I'm like kind of speechless still. This happened a long time ago. It was like 8 hours ago now, and I'm still kind of, it's still processing because it just like, let's just rip the Band-Aid off, make super conferences, and just get on with it. You know what I mean? But yeah.
I mean, that is the next step in this. This is like the beginning, and then eventually we'll get there. And I think
by the time this podcast goes on the internet, like you could get a news breaking that Oregon's coming too. So like,
well, that's the thing. It's like, it's not, this can't be it, right? There has to be corresponding moves, you would think. Like to only add two West Coast teams to the Big Ten seems a little strange.
Yeah. I don't know that we are perfect examples of like what should be done, or like if we're like the perfect people to talk about it, but like it does seem like this is more significant than Texas, Oklahoma even. Because like now you've got two conferences that are kind of got their legs kicked out from underneath them. And it's like you could come around on the idea that the Big 12 could get UCF and BYU and Cincinnati and get those teams in there and kind of salvage something. But now you've got two programs, you know, assuming that Oregon and Washington go, because I bet they will go somewhere. Because it's about defense now. You know, you don't want to get caught with your pants down and be in the wrong conference that just gets completely decimated. But you have two potential Power 5 conferences, as we used to refer to it as, without an anchor program in it. So, like, when it comes to the logistics and travel and what time games kick off and all that stuff, I think that's a conversation for later down the line. Because, you know, unless you want to talk about fish tacos now, which I'm totally happy to do.
I am always in favor of talking about fish tacos, so.
But, like, it just seems to me that this move is going to shift the entire paradigm of the sport. Whereas when Texas and Oklahoma left the Big 12, that wasn't for sure. I think this one was like the bigger move, as it in conjunction, obviously, with the first one, but like this one seemed to really rock the sport more than even the first one did.
Yeah, it's their response, and I think the Big Ten had to make one. Not that like, I don't think we were ever going to get to the point where there was like an SEC only national champion or like any of that kind of stuff that was floated out there. Like I never put any stock in that, but like if they're consolidating power the way that they are in the SEC, then as the Big Ten. And if you want to be on that level and play big boy football and make big boy money playing football, like you can't lose ground there. So they had to do something like this. I wasn't expecting it today. I wasn't really expecting it anytime soon. I feel like it was kind of put on the back burner and was maybe going to happen later on. But I'm not ultimately surprised that this is the result. Like this was the logical move. It was like, remember when the expansion stuff or the latest expansion stuff happened, people were kicking around like, oh, what can the Big Ten do? It's like, oh, well, maybe they can add like Kansas and Missouri. It's like, no, that ain't it. Like that's not the move. Yeah, that's not the move you make.
The needle. Yeah.
It's USC. And it's like really only USC. I guess like UCLA gets lumped in with it because they're coming too. But it's really like USC. Besides USC, the only other like brand that was out there that you could like make a big splash and would be a bigger splash is Notre Dame, which I'm assuming is probably what the Big Ten's eyeing next. I would think so. Like with that, if you're going to add more than 16 teams, like Notre Dame is the one you have to go after. Even who's to say whether or not they'll join? I have no idea. But I think that's probably the next move. And the ACC will take a swing at Notre Dame as well. But yeah, the ground started to shift when Oklahoma and Texas left the Big 12 for the SEC, and this was the natural and probably like only response the Big 10 could make if it wanted to keep ground.
Yeah, and it would be great if Oregon came too. You know, I think that the Oregon-USC additions might have been as significant as Texas and Oklahoma. Maybe a little bit less significant because Oklahoma is Oklahoma and Texas are maybe bigger brands in the sport just based on location, geography, and history. But USC, I think, is probably right on par with those other two programs.
I would say so, yeah.
Getting Oregon into that mix, I think, would be like a bucket for a bucket type of scenario. You know, the thing that I think that Ohio State fans want to know is, A, how does this impact Ohio State, right? This is an Ohio State podcast. I don't know that it does all that much other than cool new games and a tougher schedule. I think the bigger question, Landis, is what the hell is the national championship situation going to look like? Like, if you add all these teams, you know, the entire college football expansion discussion completely shifted because now these conferences with all these teams in it don't want to do the automatic qualifiers because you want to have more opportunity to get teams in. And it's just like the way you make the playoff now is going to be different. You have to have more grace for losing. Like, it's like a complete different shift, and we're getting into that NFL territory, you know. So, like, and maybe I'm just, like, my mind is running 10 miles an hour or 10 steps ahead of where everybody else is at right now. But, like, in 10 years, I think that you might be 8-4 and win a national championship. Like, I mean, like, if you have a conference like that, I mean, if Ohio State has a schedule that has Oregon, USC, Michigan, Penn State, and Michigan State on it, it's going to be a tough road, you know, and Notre Dame could be on that schedule. Like, I mean, if half your games are big time, prime time games that, you know, we usually only get three or four of a year now, then, you know, who knows? So,
yeah, I think we talked about that, I think, a little bit when it seemed like playoff expansion was imminent at the time. Maybe it was like last summer or something like that. And it was tabled a little bit. It's going to happen. This just like further solidifies that it's going to happen. So, like, I don't know that this move in and of itself kind of changes what was going to be the reality for Ohio State in an expanded playoff, which is to say, like, you can start losing 2-3 games a year and still be in a position to be a national champion. This just makes that all the more likely. And it is, I guess, potentially NFL-like in that it, you know, college football's regular season, I think, was like sort of special or different, at least. And that probably gets diminished a little bit in a world where losses just don't weigh as heavy as they used to. And that was true even at the advent of the 4-team playoff, and it just keeps changing as you add more teams. So I think
thing too that you have to consider too, Bill, is that as these conferences turn into super conferences, is college football even going to be able to preserve some of the rivalries and the historical things that you get used to? Like, you know, when you have all these schedules and all these teams playing, I think the sport is going to be radically different.
I think
maybe it'll be better once it feels normal, but it's certainly different.
It's definitely different, and I don't want to, like, there are a lot of people like, this is the death of college football. It's like, I don't I don't want to be dramatic. And I don't really like when people are like, if you're a quote unquote traditionalist and this doesn't jive with the way you enjoy college football, like I totally respect that. But I also am the kind of person who like, let's see a play out and like, let's see what the normal is and whether or not we like it. Maybe we'll all hate it, but, I'm not just going to assume that it's going to stink. It could be good.
Well, at the end of the road, it's just going to be awesome games. And we just like watching awesome games. And that's the whole point of watching the sport. So I think that the sport will be fine. But this is a lot of change in a lot of areas in a very short amount of time. I will give
it
people
is.
That.
Like yeah.
If you are somebody who has struggled with change, and you know the NIL thing was a huge historic step forward, and then you marry that with the transfer portal change, and then you have crazy expansion happening at the same time, college football expansions talking. Like, I don't know. I think you could make the case that in the last year and a half, there's been more dramatic change in college football than the previous 50 years combined. Like, I mean, it's
absolutely
insane.
Yeah. It's fun. Like, I just like, I use Ryan Day as like the benchmark of that because he started coaching, became a head coach in 2019. Like, think of all the shit that has changed in college football.
Man, it's crazy.
In the 3 years that Ryan Day's been the head coach of Ohio State.
I mean, just think about how dramatically different it is to just like recruit.
Yeah.
And all the stuff you've got to pitch and think about now just recruiting.
It's so different. Yeah.
You know, the questions I have, I guess, are, what kind of, if Ohio State wins a national championship in 2033, what's that team going to look like in terms of like record and schedule and path?
Right.
What's this mean for the Michigan game? All the types of things that, you know, traditional Ohio State fans, you know, are worried about. And I'll be honest with you, like, I've always been a screw tradition, let's do the fun thing. Alternate uniforms, badass. Playoff system, badass. Bowl system, you know, fuck off. Like, I don't care about all that stuff. But, like, I do this time genuinely feel bad for people who don't like what's happening. Because, like, college football for a lot of people is their favorite thing in the entire world. And it's like, now that you're kind of getting what you like stripped away from you a little bit, my only hope is that you'll grow to love the new thing. So, the entire world is definitely shifting. And like, the one thing I will say, if you're an Ohio State fan and you're listening to this podcast, like, you are the last people that I truly feel bad for. Like, I feel bad for Arizona State fans and Arizona fans and teams in the Big 12, like Texas Tech fans. Like, their conferences are getting ripped apart, and like, their programs are in turn different. Like, Arizona State's program is different today than it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Because they're in conferences that are losing anchors. Like, those are the teams that are really getting screwed here. So Ohio State is one of those teams that no matter what happens, the sport will change around them, not vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be fine in the long run. But, like, certainly, and you can tell this podcast is even a little scatterbrained because it's, like, really hard to just take all this information and put it into one, you know, single thought. But, like, shit, man, this is a lot to digest.
Mike Hall from the Big Ten Network just tweeted a photo of their studio. It's like the news desk in the Big Ten Network studios in Chicago, and there's a USC and UCLA logo on it, and it just looks very weird. It's a UCLA logo, a Big Ten logo, and then a Southern California logo, and it's very strange. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while to get used to that, I think.
How did people feel like when Penn State joined the Big Ten? Or like, I remember like when Rutgers and Maryland joined the Big Ten, and it was weird. And then like now, 10 years later, it's just, it's normal, and it is what it is. So, you know,
I don't
know logistically how they're going to do this shit.
I wondered that too. Like, for football, I don't think it's like a major thing. It's like NFL teams travel coast to coast and play games. Like, it'll be a pain in the ass, I think. And it's part of the reason why I think they're going to add more than just these two West Coast teams to make life a little easier on USC and UCLA, so they're not on a plane for 6 hours every week. But like, the Olympic sports, the sports that play more than once a week, I don't know what the hell they're going to do. I guess that's a topic for a conversation for another day, because I think people first and foremost are concerned with the football ramifications of this. But I do think, I was talking to somebody earlier today on Thursday, and I brought that up, and they said, you know, like, I think people thought about those logistics, but I'm not totally sure they cared about it when the bag that every program is going to get now is going to be in excess of $100 million once this new television deal comes down and the Los Angeles market is now part of the Big Ten footprint. So I guess those kind of things get sacrificed in the name of money, which is probably unfortunate, but not all that surprising. I like you, and like things like this happen, like you try to localize and it's like, okay, like what does this like really fundamentally change about Ohio State's existence? And maybe I'm naive to say that I feel like it's not much, but I truly feel like it's not all that much. Like you said, like the sport changes around Ohio State. Ohio State doesn't change because of things that are kind of forced upon it. So,
yeah. And just, truthfully speaking, Ohio State's probably the reason why the Big Ten is the second most powerful conference.
Well, that's
like if you took the Ohio State brand out of the Big Ten, it might not be the one that's eating up all the teams right now.
I do find Ohio State's position in all this interesting, and everything that's been reported about this move to this point has been that USC and UCLA kind of reached out to the Big Ten. They're grant of rights, I guess, is up in 2024. They were looking to move. They came to the Big Ten. Like, of course, the Big Ten is going to take them. But Ohio State is the most SEC-like program in the Big Ten. Really, no one else is even in that same vein. And Ohio State didn't want to be in a position where, like, the SEC is dominating college football and Ohio State is sort of like an afterthought. And maybe that's like not quite the right way to put it. But the idea of Ohio State like helping push the agenda here, I think, is interesting. And I don't know that they did that exactly. I would like to talk to Gene Smith at some point to ask about like Ohio State throwing its weight around a little bit, because like the Big Ten just couldn't stand pat. And the Big Ten program that is most incentivized to make sure the league doesn't stand pat is Ohio State. So I'm just kind of curious about their role in all this and how much they kind of pushed that envelope to get the Big Ten to do something when it really looked like they were going to do nothing, which I think would have been a terrible decision.
Yeah. Well, the Pac-12 did nothing, and that turned out to be a pretty terrible decision.
Yeah, the Pac-12 is like dead, right? Like, that's
I think it's dead. Yeah,
I just don't know. I would assume like two more of their teams are going to be in whatever this new Big Ten is, and then they have after that they have they had 12 teams, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so now they'll be down to 8 probably. And 8 teams that I think on their own are not a particularly strong football brand. That could be the death knell of the
Pac-12. I mean, like, I think the layup idea is that you just join the remnants of the Pac-12 with the remnants of the Big 12 to kind of make a big conference full of brands that have played Power 5 football before. But
yeah, then you sort of have like three kind of power conferences. No, not really. I mean, there's some good. If you did that, there'd be some really good programs in that third. Well, like Baylor would be in there, Oklahoma State would be in there. Utah maybe. I don't. Yeah, it's funny.
It's like you have a conference full of 16 to 20 teams, though. It's like I don't even know how you schedule that. You don't even play half the teams in your conference.
Right. I don't know. Because I was trying to figure that out with just like say let's say this entity that now includes USC and UCLA in the Big Ten stays at 16 teams. It's probably not going to, but let's just say for the sake of argument that it is. And then, okay, well, figuring that out is kind of easy. You do like a 3-6 pod scheduling thing where you lock in 3 opponents and you play the other 12 teams in the league every other year. That's pretty straightforward. But then, like, who do you lock in as the pods? Because I would think if you're doing this, you would want Ohio State and USC to play every year, right? Like that, you don't get a bigger TV draw.
Well, it's hard because the TV draw exists for Ohio State already, no matter who they play. So USC might be the other TV draw, and if you lock them in together, you might get one big game a year where both of them are in the same place and it's a kaboom. But you might want to use USC and Ohio State separately to get more ratings on multiple games if they don't play each other. So, like, that's the thing that you have to kind of weigh, too. And it's just like, how do you draw the champion then? So you have you have 4 different pods, and the winner of each pod, is there like a semifinal and then a Big Ten championship within the own system? So you have a semifinal game, then a Big Ten championship game, then a semifinal game, and a national title game. And then, of course, the playoff is going to look completely different, too. So, like, there might be legitimate, like, 5 or 6 quasi-playoff games en route to a national championship in college football in the next 10 years. Like, it's like the entire sport is shifting. So it's like everybody's making jokes about, like, oh, wow, I can't wait to watch the UCLA-Maryland game at 9 a.m. Central or 9 a.m. Pacific time. Like, and that's going to happen.
I just threw my mouth.
Big 12 or big noon kickoff at 9 a.m.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I will say this. USC has been a very ruthless program the last 6 months. And I think that if USC has been a ruthless program, you want as many ruthless programs in your conference
as possible. I think that's right. Antonio Morales, our USC writer, wrote, I thought, a really good column about that that went up on Thursday. And as I was reading it, because I think like Ohio State tries to play both sides of that coin, and they're not always successful doing it. But I think like when the money's down and you have to pick one, I think they would err on the side of ruthless when it came to ensuring the success of its football program. And I don't think I would say that about any other program in the Big Ten. So if another program that's like that is joining the Big Ten and can like help Ohio State, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, especially too, is like if Lincoln Riley like leans into that villain brand.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think the more villains in your conference, the better. So like, I mean, and who knows? In 20 years, maybe USC will be Ohio State's second biggest rival. You know, it doesn't take much for that to happen.
They have some decent history. That's why
they got a lot of those Archie games back in the Rose Bowl.
Right. A lot of them were like Rose Bowls in the 70s, but they have good history. And that's why I found myself wondering, like, okay, like, would they make like an Ohio State, USC, Michigan, I guess it'd have to be UCLA pod if they did pod scheduling? Like that'd be a pretty sexy pod.
but then you have to win your pod, right?
No. Pod scheduling is just a way to make sure that everyone in the league plays each other. It's not.
So, but then how would you keep the rankings though? Like, I don't understand how the rankings look. Is it all just one list and the top two wins?
There's no divisions. You just play your schedule and then whoever has the highest winning percentage.
I know, but the more teams, the more likely you are to have like a 4 or 5 way tie at the top.
It's the same thing that the ACC is doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just go by win percentage.
Yeah.
And then you have a tie, you go battle royale.
It is kind of crazy to think, though, that like you have a conference that's so big that you don't even play half the teams in it. It's like, how do you win a conference that you're not even exposed to half the teams?
Well, the Big Ten does that now. I've covered Ohio State since 2014. I've seen them play Iowa once.
That's true.
You know, like
they only played them once total?
Yeah, they were supposed to play in 2020, and they play this year.
Yeah, they don't play Minnesota very often, it seems, either.
They played Minnesota, I think, 3 times.
Last year and then a few years before, and that was it?
Yeah. They've gone the Northwestern 1 time in my time covering the beat. So, like, I like the idea of seeing more of the league, however that comes to be, and I think that is what will happen.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm, like, reading things on Twitter as we're talking. Apple, yeah, this is too. From John Orrand. Apple told the Big Ten that it wants to re-engage in media talks after it heard about USC and UCLA. Shocked. They're going to get so much goddamn money.
No, I know. It's insane.
it's going to be ridiculous.
Well, I mean, this is what the whole thing is. And I think it's so funny, dude, because, you know, as a recruiting guy, the only thing that I read on my stories, these angry comments all the time about like NIL is ruining the sport and shit. And like all the money that's going in is like corrupting it. It's just like, dude, you know, who's corrupting the sport. It's not the $2 million that Malachi Nelson could make. It's the $1 billion that the TV companies are to restructuring the whole sport. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what recruiting is going to look like. I don't know what the sport's going to look like. But, you know, I am a little queasy. I will admit that, like, I am totally a forge on ahead, whatever's to come, we'll make the best of it type of person. But, like, as a person who grew up loving the sport and still loving the sport, I'm a fan. I consume it. I watch it like everybody else does. We are no better than anybody listening to this podcast. I am a little afraid that the special nature of the sport is getting juiced out of it a little bit. I hope that it's still amazing in 10 years, the way that it's always been amazing. Like, and I don't know if I sound like a dramatic asshole to you or not, but...
I'm sure you're not alone in feeling that or worrying about that. I don't look at it that way. I don't think anyone who does is wrong. Like, I get it. There's people enjoy this sport for myriad reasons. So, if you're someone who like the regionality of college football or thought there was something
special,
there's
like a tribalistic thing to it about it.
Yeah. The and that's geography. That's getting wiped away a little bit for sure. Yeah. It's like, there's just not. And I think maybe sometimes like we're in our Ohio State bubble, and that, like, that's totally fine. But like, and maybe sometimes people don't appreciate like people in West Lafayette, Indiana, like get real juiced up when like Purdue plays Northwestern. I would assume like, but like, and now it's like, oh, Purdue's traveling to LA to play UCLA in a conference game. It's like, that's weird. Do we really need that? I don't know that we need that, but I guess that's just a byproduct of the conference needing to make sure it doesn't lose ground to the SEC.
But it's also a hell of a lot to put kids through, man.
It is a lot.
Like, I was at the Elite 11.
Yeah, for sure.
I was at the Elite 11 today, and like, I was just like watching Malachi Nelson. I was like, dude, this dude's life just completely changed, and he had nothing to do with it. And I just kind of wrote a mini column about it. It's just like, you know, these guys are just kind of along for the ride here. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know how much different his life will be. He still gets to go to USC and play and live in the place that he wants to play. But like, he has road trips to Maryland now. Like, when he should have been going to Tempe, Arizona. Like, it's just a different existence. So, you know, I wonder too, it's like, we're seeing the beginning part of it, and it's like, if you look at the map, you have all the Big Ten teams clustered in the Midwest and the Northeast.
Yeah.
And then you have two little dots in the Southwest, but it's just like, this is like judging a car before you put the wheels on them. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's possible that we're still in the construction phase, and it's like, there might be a few more teams that pop up on the West Coast, which will make it seem a little bit more or less lopsided.
That map all looks weird. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if it's Oregon at the top left and Washington, like, the thing I don't know is, like, if you could pick any of the top two teams in the Pac-12 to go to the Big Ten, you don't pick UCLA as two. So, like, USC, the ruthless program we were just talking about that Antonio wrote about, like, seems to have looked out for their rival. What does that mean for Oregon and Oregon State? What does that mean for Washington and Washington State? Or will they just treat their rivals the way Oklahoma treated Oklahoma State? I don't know, like, contractual things and history and all that. I think it's different for every program, but it'll be very curious to see if some of these teams bolt without them. Because, like, the Big Ten already made a mistake. Like, if you are, not today, but in the past, like, Rutgers and Maryland are, like, the biggest recipients of right place, right time ever. Like, to be in the Big Ten because of regional television markets when that lasted for 2 years and it wasn't important anymore. It's like, now Rutgers,
I mean, it got the program, it got Big Ten programs pretty substantial payouts that probably would not have happened if those two programs were not in the conference.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, those programs in general now are, like, in the Illuminati of the big of the college football
paradigm shift. They are now an unnecessary appendage, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yes, and they're in it. And it's just like, how many programs that are like Arizona State, I don't know that they would be a good take. And you said Missouri, that's not it. They might not be a take, but like Rutgers is? You know, so it's like kind of like you have to be careful of who you expand, because you only want to expand quality now. You've got enough of the dreck at the bottom of the conference. You want to get the right guys because you want to compete toe-to-toe with the SEC. So you don't want to add Oregon State or Washington State, do you?
I mean, it's not ahead of Washington or Oregon, no.
Well, of course not. But yeah. What if you add, like, if somebody said the Big Ten can add Washington, but it has to take Washington State, is that a thing that you do?
If I had to choose between a pair of programs, Washington or Washington State or Oregon and Oregon State, I would take the Oregon programs.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
It is crazy because, like, isn't Oregon and, like, who's Maryland of the Pac-12? Like, isn't UCLA kind of the Maryland of the Pac-12, or is Oregon the Maryland of the Pac-12?
No. Well, no, I think both those programs are better than Maryland.
No, I just mean, like, from, like, the Nike sexy, you know, sexy uniform could be better than they are. I mean, Oregon's probably not. They've accomplished a lot. Oregon's, they played for a national title.
And actually, but, like, UCLA has been okay under Chip the last couple of years. Haven't they won, like, 8 games the last couple of years?
Yeah. I think they're over-under this year is 9.
I actually, like, UCLA is, like, kind of, like, out of sight, out of mind, but I kind of like the way they play under Chip.
I also like their uniforms.
Love their uniforms. It will be weird seeing Big Ten teams just, like, go in to play in the Rose Bowl on a normal Saturday. That'll be very strange.
Well, some of them are never going to get there any other way.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Yeah.
Finally.
But that, Jim, what does this
Jim
mean
Harbaugh
for the Rose Bowl?
Coaching a Rose Bowl. Yeah.
What does this mean for the actual Rose Bowl?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question, because it's not going to be – It's not going to be Big Ten versus Pac-12 anymore. I know that much. At least if I'm the Rose Bowl, what I want. If I'm the Rose Bowl, what I want it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it seemed like the Rose Bowl was like kind of a pain in the ass for people, and they were trying to figure out playoff expansion and how to structure it and stuff. So maybe this makes it less of a pain in the ass if they have like no other option but to play ball.
Yep.
But yeah, that is probably fundamentally different moving forward, which again probably rankles. Is that a word? Wrinkles? Ruffles the feathers of people who are more traditional about college football, which, again, I get and respect. What do you think – I wanted to make sure I asked you this because I think sometimes it gets a little too much might get made of it. But when Maryland and Rutgers joined the Big Ten, it felt like the DMV in New Jersey became very fruitful recruiting grounds for the conference. And not everyone in the Big Ten recruits Southern California. But Ohio State obviously does. I think Michigan's there a little bit. Nebraska, I think, has been there in the past, but not so much right now.
Notre Dame,
obviously, if Notre Dame joins. But yeah. Does this – and I also asked this realizing – yeah, that's right. I asked this realizing that, like, USC is far more equipped to defend its own backyard than Rutgers and Maryland ever will be. But does this change anything about the way the Big Ten can recruit if suddenly the Southern California is part of its footprint?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I always wonder about recruiting is geography, and if somebody has to get on an airplane and fly 4.5 hours to your campus, does any other thing matter besides that? Like, at a certain point, when can you not overcome that? You know, and I think national recruiting in general has certainly normalized a hell of a lot more in the last 3 years than it was the previous 10. But like, is Purdue all of a sudden a reasonable place to go for a Southern California 3-star? Are there going to be Washington State Purdue battles? Is that what you're asking me? Or like,
yes,
like
yeah.
Oregon State Indiana battles? You know,
yeah. I'm not asking like if Purdue's going to go in and get like Mateo Uiagalelei, but is Purdue now more able to get a 3-star player from Rancho Cucamonga than it would have been before today?
Do you want to know what my actual opinion is, Landis?
Yes.
I think that we view other programs and their ability to adapt their recruiting strategy on an annual basis like Ohio State does, and like Ohio State is a unicorn. Like, Ohio State's like, you know what? Fuck Tennessee this year. We're going to Montana. And like, they're going to go get it. You know, like, most programs can't operate like that. So like, my personal opinion is that, hey, maybe they'll go into California and get a guy here or there. But like, for the most part, I think Purdue's recruiting strategy is basically locked in, right? You go into Ohio a little bit, you go into Indiana, you try your best to go into Kentucky because your coach is from there, and you know, you kind of wrangle in Midwest guys, and then that's it. You know, I don't think that all of a sudden like the bottom half of the Big Ten is going to start like recruiting Palm Springs. You know, maybe I'm wrong.
Well,
about
I guess
that,
like, I guess maybe another way to frame it maybe would be, and you kind of touched on it when you asked me, like, is Purdue going to recruit against Washington State? Like, if you're a 3-star kid in California, which league would you rather play in?
Yeah, but I don't think prospects really care about leagues.
You don't think that a kid might be more willing to consider the conference, this new version of the Big Ten over
Yeah, I got what you mean. I
bargain bin like version of the Pac-12. No.
Like
you want to play.
Reason why a prospect would consider the SEC over the Big 12 2 years ago.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that this is going to be a major problem for the Pac-12 schools, not only because they lost the anchor, but because they are less sexy again.
Yeah.
And not that they were the sexiest conference in the country to begin with, but like, the Pac-12 has been lagging behind, dragging ass behind everybody else for the past 10 years. It's like, it's only a matter of time before it got decimated. And the programs that wanted to be serious about winning and participating in college football and being obsessed with it, you know, and ironically enough, I don't know if UCLA would fit that category, but like, that is who is attractive to the big time football obsessed conferences. So, you know, I mean, personally speaking, if you would have told me this morning, hey, there's going to be some expansion, you're the Big Ten commissioner, which brand in college football that's not in the SEC would you want to add? USC would be in the top three of my choices.
USC, Notre Dame, Clemson.
Clemson, maybe. I mean, you also have Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's one. Miami.
Ooh, bring the U to the Big Ten. That'll really shake things up. I don't think the Big Ten's ready.
I
don't think the Big Ten's ready for that.
How much better of a brand is USC than Miami at this point? They're very similar.
Yeah, I guess they're pretty similar football brands. I do think
USC's ahead now. because of Lincoln.
Yeah, and but, I think if you were putting stock in futures, I think you'd probably put a little more in USC's than you would Miami. Although, you know, Mario Cristobal, I think, is a good coach and will do a good job down there, too. But they're pretty similar. I think that's right. I don't know the AAU academic side of this still seems like it's important. Both UCLA and USC are AAU schools, which is like every other Big Ten member. Oh, I guess Nebraska's not, but they were at the time they added them. So like that would probably be a sticking point too for whoever else they add. I believe all the West Coast teams we've talked about are part of that. I'm pretty sure both Washington's and the Oregon schools, Cal and Stanford definitely are. Although I don't know, I would not want to add Cal and Stanford. Maybe Stanford, but not Cal.
Yeah,
I don't know. I do. Like, I think that's my general vibe-ness is like it's earth shattering. I think that's right. But it's hard for me to like really wrap my mind around it and also get super worked up about it because it doesn't feel like it's over yet. Like I want to see what's next.
You want to really break it down once it's complete. You know what I think is funny? What about those equipment bus drivers?
The truck, that's actually a pretty good story.
Dude, do you know how far away it is from Piscataway to Los Angeles? It's like 4,300 miles. I think it's a 44-hour trip.
The closest conference opponents to USC and UCLA, I guess aside from each other, is 1,500 miles. That's Nebraska. And
How far of a drive is it from Nebraska to... So it's a 15-hour drive from Dallas to Arizona. So it's got to be a 24-hour drive from L.A. to Lincoln.
I would think so, yeah.
Or a 20-hour drive.
I drove once from San Francisco to Columbus. And the first night I stayed in Reno, and the second night I stayed in Nebraska. And that was far, far too much driving to do in 2 days.
Yeah.
Like it was a dangerous amount of driving to do in 2 days. So yeah, shout out to those equipment truck drivers who now have to haul.
They have to leave on Monday.
have to haul the Maryland truck from College Park to Los Angeles.
Get your doors blown off by 60 points. Yeah, no, I know. Oh boy. Oh, Craig.
Is there anything else you'd like to say on this subject before we get into some other Ohio State happenings?
That I apologize that you and I just kind of talked at each other for 35 minutes without really having a straight line thought, but like it really is kind of just a representation of the way it feels to me.
Yeah, I don't feel like I have fully formed thoughts on this at the moment.
Which is fine because it's not a fully formed conference yet.
That's
so,
right.
You know,
that's
put
right.
It that.
That's yeah. Right.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
All right, let's talk some recruiting, shall we?
Sure.
Let's start with the commitment that Ohio State got on Thursday from four-star Waxahachie, Texas cornerback Calvin Simpson Hunt, who flipped from Texas Tech. He was on an official visit to Ohio State 2 weeks ago, visited Texas Tech this past weekend. There was like some back and forth there, it seems like, with him not being quite sure whether or not he wanted to flip. I think Texas Tech was doing a good job of like trying to hold him off from that, but he ultimately flips. He's the third cornerback in Ohio State's class. He joins DeJohn Johnson and Kayan Lee, who committed earlier this week. Ohio State is likely to get a fourth cornerback on Friday, July 1st, when Jermaine Matthews is announcing his commitment. But Calvin Simpson Hunt, I already know, is a kid you went down and talked to in Waxahachie. He's not too far from where you live in Dallas. What were your impressions of him at the time? If you have any thoughts on him as a player, and what did you think of Ohio State flipping him from Texas Tech?
I don't know if people are aware of Texas Tech's recruiting strategy, so why don't we just take it from the top? You're aware of it, right?
I am aware of it, yeah.
Their recruiting strategy is to find young players in the state of Texas who illustrate insanely freakish athletic ability. And a lot of it is raw, and they identify these players based on certain things like, can they dunk a basketball, depending on what position they're in? How fast do they run the 400? And all the different track events that they participate in. Like, they have to have baseline physical traits that will allow them to grow into elite level players later on. And the thought is that if they get there early and they get these guys, they can teach them football. You can't teach traits, you can teach football, right? Mm-hmm. So Calvin Simpson Hunt was by far the best discovery that these guys had. Like, I mean, they got him, and he's like a freakishly fast person for his size, right?
10'6", 700 meter.
Okay. Yeah, and like, he's a 6 foot 185 pound prospect who is thick as hell. Like, I've sat in the same room with him for an hour, and I was like, dude, this guy is like jacked, you know?
Yep.
And you know, I think that the Ohio State is the nemesis of what Texas Tech is trying to do, because Texas Tech, the hardest thing about it isn't identifying these guys. It's when they're really, really right and they hit on one that's really, really good that Alabama finds, and then Ohio State finds, and Clemson finds, of keeping them from flipping them late. It's like they did Ohio State's dirty work for them. But I will give Ohio State a lot of credit on this one, because Calvin Simpson Hunt was very close with the Texas Tech staff. I mean, they spoke every single day. They took visits. He took the last official visit, I believe, to Texas Tech before making a decision. I don't know if he changed up those plans, because he was just he went to Ohio State after, right?
No, he went to Ohio State before and then went back to Texas Tech.
Yes, and then went to Texas Tech. So yeah, they got the last visit as a courtesy. Everything that they did came back to Texas Tech, and at the end of the road, Ohio State won the commitment. So, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about how many top 100 players do they have. Is Ari an asshole because he thought they weren't going to – like, I don't want to do that today. I want to congratulate Ohio State for high-level recruiting in the state of Texas of a kid who is much better than his rating, and certainly has seen his stock ascend quickly, and, you know, doing it even though Texas Tech had a commitment and did everything in their power to do it. So, you know, I think it was a very good, high effective way to recruit for that program.
He was, the time he committed to Texas Tech, he did not have a ranking. He debuted in the ranking shortly after that in the 300s. And now he is a top 200 player. I would think probably going to rise some more. I wonder, like, positionally where he might fit. I think I've watched like his highlights. He looks like a really good press cover corner. He is super fast, as Ari said, like, and that shows up when you watch him play for sure. I wonder if he can play nickel a little bit. I think the same thing about Kay and Lee too. I think both those guys are kind of versatile in that way. So, well, I mean, there's plenty of time to figure that out, but I think he's a really good player too. I think he's a guy who is going to, if he doesn't rise the rankings, I think we'll probably outperform his rankings just because of the raw athletic ability there. So I think it's a good job by Tim Walton, who seems to be finding a stride a little bit recruiting. Got Kay and Lee, now has Calvin Simpson Hunt. I think they're going to get Jermaine Matthews. Tim Walton and Perry Liana both are recruiting Caleb Downs, so they have a shot at getting two. So it's going to be a really big defensive back class. They have, so what's this, five now? If Jermaine Matthews commits, they'll have six. And
then Caleb Downs is the most important remaining prospect on their board, right?
Yeah, but they're also in on Jaden Bonsu, the four-star safety from New Jersey. St. Peter's Prep, same high school as Cody Simon, I believe. And
Kareem Hunt.
And is that right? Kareem Hunt?
I think so. Yeah. No, not Kareem Hunt.
Kareem Walker.
Kareem Walker.
I forgot about
they both Kareem have braids. I don't know. That's like right. They're both running backs with braids that went to St. Peter's prep.
I forgot about Kareem Walker.
Yeah.
But I think obviously they'll take Caleb Downs. And I think they'll take Jaden Bonsu if they can get him too. So I think you could be looking at 8 defensive backs in this class, which is a lot, but as we've said before, I think everyone sees the need to kind of retool the back end of that defense, which is to say, like, they might take, you know, between 10 and or between 9 and 11, I guess, defensive backs and linebackers when it's all said and done in this class. So that'll be something to monitor. You are out at the Elite 11, as I said at the beginning, doing a lot of stuff. I would encourage you to go to read the stories that Ari's written so far from out there. TheAthletic.com/4-6.
I've read about 40% off.
That's right. Get you 40% off. I might be like $1. I don't know.
$1 now? Yeah. So just go check it out, guys. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Wrote about Arch Manning, wrote about Dante Moore, and you.
Malachi Nelson today.
And you talked to the two guys who are out there that Ohio State is recruiting, Austin Novosad and Brock Glenn. So
before we go into that, though, Bill, can I just say, and I want to say this, because I saw C.J. Stroud throw in high school.
Coleridge, yeah.
I saw him throw in high school. So I don't know if you guys know this, and I don't know how many videos you found on Twitter if you're a big, you know, social media person. But that dude was doing the same drills as the guys there. I'm going to say this in the most politically correct way I can say it. He was fucking incredible. Like, the amount that he has grown, and to see the tangible difference between, like, a 5-star prospect and C.J. Stroud, like, the ball, I it felt like it was hurting the receiver's hand. And I don't think I saw him miss a throw all week. Like, he is insanely good. We all know that. But the amount that he has grown in just the 2 years since he was a prospect who ranked outside of the top 300 at the Elite 11 is just absolutely bonkers. So, yeah. Like, this is his last year. We all know that. But he is – I don't know how to compare him to Haskins and Fields. But, like, arm talent-wise, getting to watch him for 3 straight days just throw the ball around and do these drills in person, I don't know that I ever saw a current Ohio State quarterback throw that much in person in year 2 or 3 of their career in my entire 10 years there, as much as I saw C.J. Stroud. Holy shitballs.
Yeah, he is. First of all, he's like he's big, right? I don't think people realize how big CJ is. That's a big cat. You watch him from the press box, you watch him on television, or even if you're in the stadium, I think you get an appreciation of how talented he is. But you can see him in like the kind of setting that you saw him in, which is just like way more up close and personal. And I got to watch him at the Student Appreciation Day practice. Like, I was standing like 6 feet behind him. Like, I felt like I was in a pocket with him at times. Myself and Tim May were just kind of standing there watching him throw in a live scrimmage. And it was just like, yeah, he doesn't miss throws.
Ball jumps off. No ducks.
Yeah, the separating factor, I think we talk about like guys like Fields and Haskins and compare him to CJ. Those guys might have a little more life on their ball when it's 50 yards down the field. But anything within 30 yards of the line of scrimmage, CJ can do everything that they did, and maybe in some cases even do it even better. And he has gotten tangibly better from the time he set foot on campus until now. It's really impressive.
I mean, I watched Bryce Young and Caleb Williams too, because they were there, the Heisman Trophy winner and the next coming of greatness, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And this is the Elite 11. They're in shorts. You know, I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
His arm talent shat on theirs.
Interesting. Really? You think
and,
so?
And I don't. I that's just from what I saw. So, you know, in Caleb Williams, what makes him great isn't just how well he throws. I mean, he brings things to the table that CJ doesn't. So
for sure.
I'm not trying to say that CJ and same with Bryce. But like the thing that we have to start talking about, and we'll get into the recruiting thing again too, but this is an Ohio State show, and I think people would be interested in this, is that CJ Stroud to me looks like the number one overall pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah.
And if that happens, how do you contextualize him as it pertains to some of the great quarterbacks that Ohio State has had? Because it has only been 10 months since we were having should Kyle McCord start conversations. And it's like right now, maybe there's a difference between greatest Ohio State quarterback of all time and greatest pro prospect. But he is on a level that or a trajectory that I'm not sure an Ohio State quarterback has been on maybe ever.
I think that's probably right. I think there's something to him, and I don't want this to come off the wrong way, because I think he is talented in his own right to be considered QB1 in the upcoming draft, but I also think he's riding a little bit of the momentum that exists just sort of at the position at Ohio State that started with Dwayne, carried through to Justin, and now is propelling CJ into those conversations in conjunction with his immense talent. But I think that probably needs to be taken into consideration too when you talk about, like, or how does he compare to the other guys. I need to see what he does on the field this fall before like he's, I thought he was very good last year. I think everyone who watched him would probably agree that he could have played maybe a little better in some games. Although, like, he's not the reason they lost to Oregon and Michigan. But, like, does he have that thing about him where he starts making special plays when the chips are down? And I think he does. Yeah. I think he does. I don't really think he was in position to do that much last year. They, like, either, like, beat the shit out of whoever they were playing or were behind in a game and, like, weren't really ever in much of a position, I think. Maybe the Oregon game, but I'm not really going to hold that against him in his second start. So I want to see a little bit of that to help me make that kind of judgment. But there's a huge
difference between watching him throw out in shorts in California and winning a game in November in Michigan Stadium too. So
yeah, he's a tremendous passer. Maybe the best pure passer of the group that we're kind of talking about him in. I would like to see him be a little more of a playmaker when it's needed this year.
Yeah.
And I think he has that ability too. I just would like to see him do it.
It just was, it was kind of a treat to see. That's all.
Yeah. No, I think it's awesome when you can watch a quarterback in that setting. You're right. It's like not real football, but it's also kind of fun just to watch him spin it and like listen to the thing howl as it comes out of his hand. You know what I mean?
The home run derby isn't baseball, but who doesn't like watching
still,
it?
It's still entertaining. Right. It's still entertaining. Yeah. So, no, that's cool. And it's interesting that it's also kind of cool that you get to see him not only there but also in comparison to Bryson.
He would do a rep, and then the high schooler would do a rep, and then the high schooler would do a rep, and then Bryce would come in. So you would get to, it's like, you know, sometimes when you watch like videos that are on top of each other,
yes,
like on a pitch or something, and you can see how they move. Like, it was just like kind of like a perspective of, and I tried to write that in the Arch Manning column that I wrote, of just like, you know, we put so much pressure and emphasis. I've done four podcasts today. My head's about to explode. On just how important five-star prospects are, and like Dylan Raiola is going to go through that, and Devin Brown has that it factor that, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's so much, but the amount that they grow in a college weight program in 2 years under the tutelage of their offensive coordinator and a guy like Ryan Day, it was just a nice reminder to see, like, I'm always like, start the kid as a freshman, and it's just like, when you compare the freshman versions of five-star elite-level prospects to the sophomore version or the third-year player that C.J. Stroud is going in to be, like, it is night and day.
Yeah, yeah. That's the hard thing with college football trying to evaluate. It's like, these guys show up to the NFL, like, ready to go for the most part. It's very different in college football. Guys change so much. I think I said when we were at one of the camps, Winston Watkins, who's like going to maybe be a five-star receiver in 2025, who's committed to Texas A&M, like ran his 40 time, and he was like upset with what his 40 time was. And then somebody was like, Garrett Wilson ran that when he was in a sophomore in high school too. Guess what? You're gonna shave 0.2 of a second off that thing by the time you're running for at the NFL Combine, and your 4.6 is going to be a 4.4, your 4.5 is going to be a 4.3. Like, don't worry about it. So that's sure across the board. But Novosad and Brock Glenn, what kind of vibes did you get from those guys?
So Novosad is going to commit in the next week, he said. So I don't know if that's out there or not. Is that a thing?
Yeah, I think he's told people like soon. So
yeah,
next week.
And like, I'm exhausted. I don't know if I can write this story tonight. But you know, he was very general and complimentary of all three programs down to Baylor, Ohio State, and A&M, which everyone knows too, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I thought it was funny that Brock Glenn and Novosad were roommates.
Oh, really? That is funny.
At Elite 11, they didn't talk about, you know, but it doesn't sound like they're going to go to the same school. And I think if I had to guess that Novosad's going to go to A&M and Glenn's going to end up at Auburn, and Glenn's first name is Auburn. So, you were right about that. I asked him. I think I was the 30th person to ask him, but he's like, yeah, dude, yeah, it is.
Yeah, man.
But, you know, both of those guys look really good. I mean, honestly, there were a lot of misses for everybody out there, but there were a lot of flashes. And it's like, if you're on that field and you're invited there, like, you know, you got something about him. But, like, if they miss on those both of those guys, which is a distinct possibility, you know who's an interesting name? And I'm making this up completely. That I would go after if I were Ohio State, and they might, is J.J. Cole. You know, is that something that people have been, you know, theorizing on? Because he's that four-star prospect out of Ankeny, Ohio, that's committed to Iowa State right now. And, you know, he was awesome. And, you know, he's kind of like in that footprint. I guess if you're coast-to-coast now in your conference, everyone's in your footprint. But
yeah,
he's kind of like in that geographical footprint that might, you know, qualify for something like that. So, you know.
I think, I think they're probably not going to get either of those guys now, Novosad or Glenn. I think if I had to pick one or the other, I would say that they don't get either of them. And I'm very curious to see how they pivot from there. J.J. Cole, I think, is an interesting one. Who's the kid who's going to Purdue? Ricky Collins, is that his name?
Collins, yeah.
I think maybe he could be someone because at this point, they're going to have to try to flip somebody.
Well, here's Ohio State's problem. They have to convince somebody to come be the guy in the middle of a bunch of shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that hasn't been an issue in the past for some reason, but, like, now it's just like, if you're Ricky Collins and you're from Louisiana and you're a four-star prospect who's a borderline top 200 player, like, what's the better scenario for you? Is it to go to Purdue and be the guy from day one and be the thing that, you know, is the program builds around, or go be the guy who's likely going to get squeezed out in a year?
Right.
You know? And, like, I guess if you know, Ohio State fans will say, well, you just want the right guy who doesn't think about those types of things, just comes in and competes. But it's like, you have to think about that because they're on the same field as these guys.
Yeah,
they know
not,
how good other people
life.
Are.
Yeah.
And it's like, even if you are a very good player, like, why even risk it? Because, like, you might be a tremendous player, but you might still not be as good as the guy next to you, you know? And, you know, if you flip the coin three times, you know, and I'm going to get a bunch of tweets and emails about how I like participation trophies and stuff, like I did last time. But, like, that's what they're in the middle of. Like, don't you think one of the two guys at the, like, Glenn or Novosad would have been, like, happy to join the class if Raiola wasn't right behind him? Like,
I think it would have been easier sell for Ohio State if Raiola wasn't right behind them. But I also don't think I don't think that's necessarily the reason either one of them would not pick Ohio State if they don't. Like, Baylor is a good program. A&M is a good program.
Yeah.
Brock Glenn, I guess, I don't know. Brock Glenn's like Auburn, Florida State, TCU. Not quite as good programs. I don't know about that. But, like, it's not – if a kid doesn't want to enter, like, a crazy loaded quarterback room, it's like, okay, like, that's a normal decision. I hope no one, like, criticize him for, like, oh, he's afraid of the competition. Like, oh, he's just making a whatever he thinks is the right decision for himself.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. But it makes me interested in what Ohio State's going to do next. And I think they would try to move on and maybe try to flip a guy or two. J.J. Cole is coming to Iowa State, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ricky Collins, I don't know.
And his dad is like your...
He's
the mecca of Landis.
Cole's kicking camp, which is like the best kicking camp there is, that is J.J. Cole's dad, right?
That's right. I wrote a story about J.J. Cole a few years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that.
I do, because he was in Columbus. He was the quarterback MVP of the Under Armour camp in Columbus two springs ago.
And you're the one who told me to write about him.
I was the one who told you to write about
him. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Because I didn't get to talk to him for some reason. I don't know why. I must have been talking to some, like, offensive lineman or something like that. Because that's what I do when I go to those things. But, yeah, he was impressive then. He's a big kid. He's like 6'7", right? 6'6", 6'7".
It's huge. Yeah. He's the biggest one there.
He's really, yeah, he's a really big kid. And I think Ohio State has at least, like, watched him. Like, they're not unaware of him. I don't think they've really pressed anything there, but they might now. They could go elsewhere. I did think it was funny, not to sound like a colossal homer, but the kid who won Elite 11 MVP, Jackson Arnold, was like the first guy in this class that Ohio State really seemed to like go all in on, and then he ended up committing to Oklahoma. And it's like, oh, I guess like they, and he was like not the highest rated guy in the class, but he ended up being the one who won the Elite 11. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
it doesn't make or break their class, right? If they don't get a quarterback, like on the list of things that can make or break their class, I think who
I was talking to Berm on the sidelines at Elite 11, and he was like very much of the opinion that they absolutely have to have one in this class.
I think they,
because if Devin Brown were somehow to win the job next year, they could end up with one quarterback on their roster.
Right. That's a real thing. I agree with that, but I'm not sold on the idea that it like has to be a high school guy. They could just go get a transfer if they find themselves in that position.
But they might need two in that scenario.
Yeah, maybe they need a high school guy and a transfer, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if they need to go sign, you know, some guy who's committed to, you know, Texas Lutheran right now. You know what I mean? Like, I think that you go after the best you can go, but it's like, if you can get anybody from the Elite 11 finals, I think you take them. And just, like, the reason why J.J. Cole jumps out to me is because he seems to make sense in every aspect.
Was there anybody there, not to put you on the spot, besides Brock Glenn, who's not committed?
There were a few, but I can't. Their names are escaping me right now.
Okay.
Let me pull up the roster real quick. And maybe I should have just gone around and asked every single person about Ohio State. And that didn't occur to me to do that. It would have in my old life, but yeah, there were a few. But I think there was only three out of the 15 or 16 guys that were there that weren't. Okay, so Brock Glenn wasn't committed. Avery Johnson, the kid from Kansas, wasn't committed. Dante Moore's not committed, but he's not going to Ohio State.
I forgot about Dante Moore, right?
Yeah, and Emery Williams, who's out of Milton, Florida. But he's to Miami now, isn't he? So, only three guys, and one's Dante Moore, so it doesn't count. Yeah, Emery Williams is now a Miami commit, so...
Was that before or after Jaden Rashada? That was before, I guess.
I think it was before, yeah.
That could be interesting.
I walked up to Jaden Rashada and I said, "Hey, I'm Ari Wasserman from The Athletic." And he goes, "Are you guys the guys who put the report out about me?" And I said, I don't think so, no. And he goes, "Good, because I'm never doing an interview with On3 ever again." And I thought that was hilarious.
That is funny. Good for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we put that out there.
No, I was like, if they did, it wasn't. I don't know what you're talking. There was a lot of people who work here, but I knew it wasn't us.
Yeah.
But it's just like a reminder of just like it's tough sometimes on these guys, you know.
Yeah, they get a lot of, especially now. Like I don't know. I guess that's the world we live in. It's like these NFL player signs a contract for $45 million, just like normal to report how much money they're making. And I guess it's a new reality for these kids that people are now going to speculate or wonder or report, even if it's erroneously, how much money.
Yeah. I hope that he got his bag, because then I'd feel less bad for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he got quite the bag that was reported, but he's over time he will certainly get a bag, and that's good for him.
They reported he got a Louis bag, but he might have gotten a Ziploc bag. Like I don't know, like who knows what he got. But,
I think it was a little nicer than a Ziploc bag.
Lunch bag.
Yeah. I don't know.
JanSport.
JanSport. All right. Anything else in Elite 11?
It just was cool to see everybody out there, and I'm excited to see how it all turns out. But I wish you were there. It would have been fun to hang out with you for a few days.
Yeah, I probably should have went. Now knowing that CJ's there, I wish I would have.
I mean, I don't know. CJ did the, you know, he has a lot going on. He's got a lot of people around him all the time. He was signing autographs, and, you know, he wasn't necessarily the beacon of wanting to talk to the media this week. So I think that
he's going
to
get enough of that in the fall, so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was cool to watch him. I think it would have been a good story if you like came out and charted his throws or something like that. Like, I mean, but there are psychopaths there that charted every single throw that was thrown there. I don't know how people do that shit, but, you know, all the power to them.
Who else? What other current college quarterbacks are there besides CJ, Bryce Young, and Caleb?
Devin Leary and Caleb Williams.
Devin Leary. Oh, yeah. I saw. Devin Leary.
Devin Leary. He's got some juice to him, too.
I want to draft him in our Dynasty League.
Yeah. You can trade up.
I might have to. I think our commissioner Ryan Donnelly's in love with him too, so he'll probably just draft them. That's fine.
Yeah.
Quickly before we wrap up, just a reminder: Jermaine Matthews is committing July 1st. Darren Reed, a 4-star defensive lineman from Columbus, Georgia, is committing. I believe on the 4th. It's like Ohio State or LSU. That's like the next one to keep an eye on. And then I would just say, like, generally, coming out of these June official visits, it seems like quite a few guys are kind of in decision mode. A handful of whom like don't have dates set to announce. But I think over the next like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe like Caleb Downs, I think, is a friend of mine. They were like Tackett Curtis, John Walker, the big defensive tackle from Florida. I think like maybe initially said he was going to announce in the fall, but I don't think I'd be terribly shocked if that happened sooner now that official visits are winding down. Justice Haynes, Jaden Bonsu, I think is later in July or maybe
basically they're going to have 17 top 100 players committed and they're going to have the number one class in the country, right?
Well, yeah, they were number one when Kay and Lee committed, and then Notre Dame got a good offensive tackle, and they went back to number one. But then when Calvin Simpson Hunt committed on Thursday, Ohio State went back to number one. I told someone in the comments of the story there earlier this week, like Ohio State and Notre Dame are going to go back and forth for a few months, and then in the end, Alabama's going to be number one, and that's there's nothing you can do about it.
Who's number one right now?
Ohio State is back at number one now after Simpson
Hunt. Oh.
But they were not.
Okay, because they got Cam Williams too, right? Or is he a 24 kid?
Who, Notre Dame?
Yeah, Cam Williams is 24.
24, sorry. Yeah. Top but they 100 got, player. They got yeah. that offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Whose name I am forgetting, but he's like a top 60 player. So they jump in front.
Oh, Charles Yakuza.
Yes.
Who Yakuza?
Yeah.
Charles Hashmi.
All right. We'll wrap up there. Thanks for listening to 4-6 with A and B. We greatly appreciate it. Oh, shout out to everyone who gave us 5-star reviews after we begged for them last time. I saw all of them. There are some questions in there. We'll definitely. I was planning to get to some of them today, but then this news happened. So we'll try to get to them in the next episode for sure. Start to pivot, I think, a little more toward like team stuff with Big Ten Media Days coming up in a few weeks and camp coming right after that. But we'll certainly keep on track of the recruiting as well. Subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/4-6. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple. We would greatly appreciate it. And we will talk to you guys next week.